What's going on, everyone? Eric here, and I want to welcome you to the first episode of History of the Ride. On this episode, we are going to take a dive into a company from down under, one of the finest car manufacturers to ever grace this earth. That is going to be the Holden Car Company. Yes, Holden. We're going to talk about the beginning of the company to the end, the sad, sad end of a great, great company. And unfortunately, we'll probably be the final manufacturer in Australia. They're not going to have any more since Ford has shut down their plant. Mitsubishi has shut down their plants there. They're going to be importing everything. And that's really shitty. That sucks. But you know something? Let's not get there yet. Sit back, relax, take a ride, and let's talk about Holden.
Some people will tell you how small their car is. Some still talk about how big their car is. But surely the question is, how right is it? I chose my Commodore for many reasons. It's big enough for the family, small enough for easy parking and handling, tough as nails, and four more very good reasons. I want them safe and sound.
Commodore, hey, now, a great Australian today? Family.
Holden actually started out in 1856 as J.A. Holden, founded by James Alexander Holden, who was from England and moved to Australia, then founded the company. He moved to South Australia, Adelaide to be exact. That's where Holden would first become a company. And they would make saddles. Yes, saddles for horses. You'll find that a lot of manufacturers, before they became car manufacturers or any sort of that nature, were making saddles or making the bodies for horse-drawn carriages. And your first mechanics would be blacksmiths. You know, the most mechanically inclined person to fix something. Someone who's mechanically inclined and able to understand how it works and fix it. That's why they became the first mechanics. So after that, James Alexander's son, Henry, would take over the business and would take on a partner in 1885 by the name of Henry Frost. And then the company would become Holden and Frost, which would be a great partnership. It would be beneficial for everybody. It would go on to really help cement Holden as a manufacturer, as a company in Australia. It would be 1905, though, that would change the game. His grandson, James Alexander's grandson, Edward, would join the company, and with him, he would bring an interest in this new thing, the automobile. And with that interest, he would help propel Holden from being just a saddle manufacturer to, by 1908, doing upholstery for vehicles, for automobiles, doing the seats and things like that, and would really start the beginning of what would make this a prolific car company, one that people rally behind, one that people truly love, and one that people are sad to see going. Now, in 1913, they would be making sidecars for motorcycles, which is pretty cool. I have to be honest. I'm not a motorcycle guy, but that's pretty badass. And in 1914, they would start rebodying old chassis from different motor bodybuilders, different companies that just aren't around anymore that were making cars. There's a bunch of different companies that made cars back then that don't anymore. But they would get the chassis and the motor, and they would rebody, and they would put their body on it, used chassis. And in 1917, they would have a name change. They would become Holden Motor Bodybuilder. And this is important because also in 1917, the Prime Minister of Australia would place a tariff on the import of cars that for every complete car that was shipped into the country, they would have to send one that was just the chassis and the body, or just the chassis and the drivetrain. I apologize. So that was good news for Holden. They were like, man, we make bodies. Now we got to get our hands on the new ones. They're going to import brand new chassis to us, and we make them. We make the bodies for them. This is going to be great. So that's what they do. Edward Holden gets a hold, by 1919, he gets a hold of brand new chassis from GM and from Ford. And he starts putting their, and the Holden company starts putting their bodies on them. And they're branding them Holdens. And now you have a Holden with a Ford or a GM motor. But you still have a Holden, which is pretty badass in its own. There's an Australian company. They're making their cars, making them feel good. Making the Australian people feel good about themselves and about their country. Now, during this, by 1923, they're producing like 12,000 or more cars a year. I mean, you're talking big numbers for 1923 in production of vehicles. But, you know, they have the assembly line figured out and all of those things, which is great. That means that's why they're pumping out as many bodies as they can. But remember, they're putting bodies on chassis, not their own motors. They're just putting the bodies on these, which is good for now. But they'll get better soon, I promise. Now, by 1924, this is when the game changes big time for them. This is when they go into a deal exclusively with General Motors. Yes, a partnership that would last for almost 100 years. In 1929, though, the Depression would hit Holden hard. And when I say hard, I mean really hard. They had companies where they were building these bodies for these cars, and they were having to shut them down. There just wasn't the money. Now, GM would step in. In 1931, General Motors would then merge with Holden and would have another name change. Holden would now be General Motors Holden LTD, or General Motors Holden Limited. And with that, they get put under the umbrella of an American brand that is strong and can back them well. And at this point in their business, that's what they need. They were struggling, things were hard, and even after the merger, it was still not the best. So GM sent in a man by the name of Larry Hartnett. Now, he's an Englishman, he's from England, and he worked for a company called Vauxhall, another car company owned by GM, and he would be sent to Australia to determine whether or not Holden was worth keeping. Was it get rid of them, or was it let's make this work? Quickly, though, he fell in love with this company, and he would just try to make a turn. He would want them to make the biggest change ever, and he backed them 100%. And because of that man, Holden stayed around. And by 1935, they were innovating in the car industry. And by innovating, I mean they were doing something that car companies weren't doing yet. They knew that they needed to use one chassis and make 6 different cars. Why not? So if you wanted, now they only have one type of car at this point, but if you wanted it to be a different configuration, they had 93 different panels to choose from to make a different configuration for it. They knew consumers wanted different. They were already ahead of the curve, and they wouldn't get recognition for that enough. A lot of innovative things that they did, they didn't get enough recognition for. But that's really where it started. They figured that out, and that's pretty cool. Some unheard of stuff coming out of this company in Australia. Now, that pretty much means that for one chassis, they could kind of almost get 6 different models or more in today's standards. And by today's standards, that's commonplace. I mean, you see so many different cars on the same chassis as the other. Even from different even one company to another. Not even, you know, just under the same umbrella. So that's common practice now. Another innovative move that they would make would be in 1936, when they would produce the first ever stamped steel roof for cars. Yeah, and 12 months later, GM would do it too in America, and GM probably got more recognition than Holden did for it. But again, on the forefront of innovation, on the forefront of just the overall automotive industry, being there from the beginning, and it just goes to show that them being ousted as they are is just sad. Now we get to the war. I really hope you're enjoying this episode of History of the Ride. We're going to take a quick break and hear from some of our sponsors. Now, GMH, General Motors Holden, would stop building cars and would start helping with the war, and did they ever. They would be building airplanes, trucks, weapons, tents. They were making tents. Remember, they did upholstery back in the day. And even boats. All for the war effort. And by the time this was all over with, when this was all going on, in order to figure out how to do all these things, because they'd never done it before, they actually had to make the tools to make the parts for these things. So they're doing it all. And this would prove to be really helpful to them, because it would show that they know how to do it. They know how to make every component to the vehicle that they want to build. So the war ends. 1948 rolls around. They want to come out with their own car. And what do they want to do? They come up with the idea for the FX. Now, at first, it would be called Project 2000. Okay? And this was all because the Prime Minister said he had a call to action. He wanted his countrymen to come up with the first Australian-made mass-produced car. And Holden was like, man. And Hartnett was like, man, we can do that. So they did. They said, we're going to make that car. They come up with a design, made it a 6-cylinder too. So, you know, they wanted to start off big. No 4-bangers here. 6-cylinder. So they wanted their first car to have a little pep in it, of course. But for it to be okay to go, they had to go to the president of GM. And at this time, the president of GM was a man by the name of Alfred Sloan. And, well, you know, he was kind of a douche canoe. I'm going to be honest with you. Even the president of the United States at the time, Teddy Roosevelt, didn't like the guy. And he hated the idea. He did. But he saw the potential in it, and he saw the money that could be made from it. Let's be honest. He didn't get where he was being an idiot. So he approved it. But when he approved an Americanized version. He approved it, and then he got the Americans involved in it, and he took away what the company of Holden, what GMH, had come up with. They had a nice sleek body design, all flat and together, and then their team came up with the round lights and very Americanized look for the time. When actually Holden, again, had it figured out, because the design that Holden wanted to do originally for the FX was what kind of we do today, a streamlined look, headlights and grill all kind of go together, and that's how cars are now. Again, Holden, ahead of the curve. So sad that they're not going to be around anymore. Like, it's terrible. Every time I think about all the innovations they did, you think about what you're losing, which is just a great company. But because of the design changes and because of the headaches with it, Larry Hartnett, Sir Hartnett, would leave the company, and because they couldn't come to an agreement, which was sad. Now, that doesn't mean that the car didn't do well. It was still an Americanized version, though, but it was an Australian car. It was mass-produced in Australia. Some of the components for the car did come from GM plants in America, but they were all built in Australia. Even the engine blocks and the main components for the engines were still built in Australia. And that was huge. It was a big deal to the country. They're like, hey, that's our car. That's our car. Okay? And that's what it was. It was the Australians' car. And it sold well. Very well. They would go on to then come into the 50s and say, hey, we did really well with this, let's do another one. And that's when the coupe utility would come out, or the Ute. And that would be 1951. Now, the Holden Ute would not actually be called a Ute for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, the Ute wouldn't actually become a vehicle until 2000 as its own vehicle. From 2000 to 2017 is when Holden would produce the actual named Ute. Before that, though, it was the coupe utility. And during that time frame, from 1951 when they were introduced until 1984, it would be the coupe utility, and then at one point they would change. And Commodore, the Holden Commodore, would have a version of it called the Commodore Utility. And then in 1984, they kind of scrubbed all that. They started making, Holden started making trucks and things like that as well. And that's kind of where their utility vehicles went. And then in 2000, when the Ute finally came out as its own car, it was more of a sports car than it was a utility vehicle. Let's be honest. And from 2000 to 2017, people treated it as such and made some of the world's most amazing vehicles. In 1957, Holden would start exporting their cars to more than 17 different countries. And I'm talking all kinds of places. They were exporting cars to countries in South Africa. They were exporting even to Fiji. So they were going all over the map, which as a business is a great idea. Why not spread the wealth a little bit? We want people to enjoy our car, as Holden would look at it. And General Motors, of course, would look at it too, because, well, General Motors owns Holden. And again, another smart move made by not only GM, but Holden, so GMH. And as we've learned, Holden and General Motors as a whole is not one to really make stupid decisions too often. So I can definitely see this being that smart move that they made, because later on, as we get into the 60s, you find that they are exporting to more countries and becoming bigger and better. And I just wish they would have been exported here to our country instead of us just getting the Pontiac versions of stuff. But that's just personal. I'm sorry. So, I mean, as a whole, through the 50s into the 60s, Holden has done a great thing. They've been around for over 100 years now, and the future is just on the uprise. And that is a great thing for this company that unfortunately has a sad future, and we all know the end of it. Well, that's the end of this episode on the history of Holden. Come back next time for part two of the history of Holden, where we're going to discuss the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s. Through that time span, we're going to talk about the racing history. We're going to talk about different and more iconic cars that Holden would come out with as the decades would progress. And we're going to eventually get to the saddest part of it all, the end of Holden. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I can't wait for you to come back and take a listen to the next one. Until then, you guys have a good one. I'm your host, Eric, here on History of the Ride.